And good morning. Welcome to Alternative Currents. I'm Bella Johnson. This month's guest, Edward Espe Brown, takes me back to the early 1970s when I learned to bake bread with his Tassajara bread book. And I had an intro prepared, but I'm going to read actually from this well-worn copy of this book. In the words of Edward Brown, first came to Tassajara when it was still a resort in May 1966. Got a job as the dishwasher, learned to make bread, soups, and scrub the floor. I could never understand the cooks. One of the cooks quit. Offered his job, I jumped right in over my head. Instantly, I understood. In fact, I acquired cook's temperament. What a shock. During that summer, my friend Alan and I did Zazen together. One time, Suzuki Roshi came down with several students. The first thing to do in setting up camp is to carry water and gather wood. Now we have carried water and gathered wood, he said. The next spring, I was suddenly head cook of a monastery, 22 years old and about as sure of my position as a leaf which falls in the winter creek. Proceeded to do a lot of things which I didn't know how to do, learning firsthand, the blind leading the blind. Bumped my head quite a bit and a few other people's heads also. The actual cooking, I discovered, was the easiest part of the job. I was head cook at Tassajara for 3 summers and 2 winters, until being completely devoured, bones cast aside, I was finally exhausted of food. Now I build stone walls, which is really not such heavy work after all. And to bring you up to date, since Tassajara Bread Book, Edward Brown has been an ongoing student of yoga and qigong, also a celebrated author of several cookbooks, the Tassajara Bread Book aforementioned, Tassajara Cooking, the Tassajara Recipe Book, and Tomato Blessings and Radish Teachings, as well as co-author of the Greens Cookbook with Deborah Madison, and recently edited is a book of lectures by his Zen teacher Suzuki Roshi called Not Always So. This released in 2002. Edward leads meditation retreats and teaches cooking classes as well as classes in mindfulness touch, a form of hands-on healing, and liberation through handwriting, practicing specific handwriting changes to get out of your own way. As a photographer, Edward puts his images of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, flowers, cows, and scenery onto greeting cards using the original photos. And if you want an exquisitely sharp vegetable cutting knife, he is the man to talk to. He may be reached through his website at www.yogazen.com and is actually going to be in our neighborhood at the Morgan Bay Zendo for 2 days, Friday, September 3rd at 7 p.m. doing a presentation called Real Life Zen, Meeting the Inner Dog and Tasting the Truth of Each Moment, and Saturday, September 4th, Receiving the Blessings of Our Lives, again at Morgan Bay Zendo. Let me give you numbers, 374-9963 or 667-7170 for more information. And also, Edward Brown presenting At Ease in Body and Mind, a second annual meditation and yoga weekend at Tanglewood Camp in Lincolnville, Maine, September 10th through 12th. For more information on that, you may call 589-4591. Welcome, Edward Brown, after that long introduction.
Well, good morning, or afternoon, as the case might be.
That's right. So as I said to you when we originally spoke, I presume you've gotten yourself a life since the Tassajara Bread Book, and a lot of things that I don't know about you, and would love to have you bring me up to date, as well as the listening audience.
Well, I spent altogether, starting out with being a cook at Zen Center. I spent 20 years at Zen Center. It's very interesting, you know. I left college and I went to the Zen Center to attain true realization. And I got to the Zen Center. I had a sleeping bag and a little backpack. And when I first left Tassajara in 1973, by that point I had a wife, a daughter, a car, and a carload of stuff. So I think this is something to do with Buddhism in America, as opposed to, like, you leave those things to go practice meditation. We're still sorting out, you know, like, how do we do meditation practice in Buddhism and spiritual life in America? And does it come with a family or not? And subsequent to leaving Tassajara, then I got on what I think of as the Zen Center fast track, and it turned out that the Zen Center I belonged to was growing by leaps and bounds, and I became, I had a succession of jobs, and finally, you know, the next thing I knew, by the middle of the 1970s, I was the president, the chairman of the board, and chief executive officer of this $4 million a year corporation, and rather than being a spiritual person, I was learning how to be, you know, an executive administrator and read balance sheets and profit and loss statements and think about, you know, personnel issues and various things like this, which hadn't been my idea of what spiritual practice was. So I've had to, you know, a lot of ideas have shifted over the years. And of course, we can go on from there, you know, that's 1975. And I was also at the time not only president and chairman of the board, and I was also head of the practice for the San Francisco Zen Center at our City Center building. So as you might guess, anyway, my marriage fell apart. And then because it was also difficult, I dropped out again. You know, I stopped all those jobs and thought I'd just sort of practice Zen. And then I started working, though, at our restaurant Greens, as a busboy, and the next thing I knew, well, a couple of years went by, and I was the manager of Greens and the wine buyer. So these things keep having a way of happening. If you have any basic competence at all, you know, the world is looking for that and hungry for that, and they'll use you and use you up. And so that was quite a nice job, though, you know, being wine buyer. And then I went back down to Tassajara to lead a practice period, and I had an experience there after 20 years of practicing Zen. One day I was sitting there in the meditation hall, and I thought, what'll I do today? And somehow this thought occurred to me, why don't I just touch what's inside with some love and some kindness and some warm-heartedness? And as soon as I thought that, the tears just started pouring down my face, and then the little voice inside said, well, it's about time. Mm-hmm. And that was profoundly affected me, because I realized I had been, you know, aiming to produce a particular mind and body that I thought was acceptable and that people would like, and that would be okay for me to be me, because, you know, I was performing appropriately, you know, in a good spiritual fashion, etc. And I checked this with one of my Zen teachers at the time, Katagiri Roshi, and I said, is this okay to just touch what's inside? Is that Zen? Or, you know, should I be doing something else? And he gave me a very interesting answer, which was that, you know, he said, Ed, for 20 years, I tried to practice the Zazen of Dogen. The meditation of Dogen is that Dogen is the founder of the Soto school in Japan, who's quite a prolific and expressive writer. And he said, I tried to practice his meditation for 20 years before I realized there was no such thing. And so I think we do a lot of things in our life, aiming for various things and trying to perform in various ways that people will like and that we'll be happy with ourselves finally, that we measure up to our, you know, overly high internal standards, and at some point maybe we can give it a rest and, you know, touch what's inside and be ourselves and be more true to ourselves and learn how to be what some people, and at least in the Zen tradition, you call that learning to be a human being, or to grasp an ordinary person's life, finally, which is pretty nice. But that anyway in itself has, over the last 20 years now, been extremely challenging, which, if you want, I can go on. But what do you think about so far how we're doing here?
Well, no, I love what you're saying, and it really has occurred to me so often, and why I've been drawn more and more to the teachings of Buddhism and Zen practice is just the fact that it's really easy to be spiritual when you don't have to be in the world in the way that we are thrust out in Western culture. But entirely you know, a different thing when we're trying to practice amidst the chaos, you know, finding that. Frank Ostaseski, do you know Frank?
Yes, I do.
Yes, was my guest last month or the month before and was talking about finding a place in the middle of things, and I just loved that.
Well, sometimes meditation practice can certainly be that. And I think people do a lot of things that kind of help them find their place in the middle of things. I certainly have friends who, you know, seem to do gardening in a way that it establishes them in the middle of things. And for many years there, I was walking was one of the main things I did, aside from meditation. And walking, especially in nature, seems to me to be very stabilizing. And meditation practice for me at many points in my life has been very stabilizing, and then there has been times over the last 20 years when it's been very difficult to do meditation, and very challenging, and I've ended up doing a lot of different things finally. And I think it sort of depends on who you are, but it's certainly, you know, and it's certainly possible to find things that help us. If I mentioned gardening and walking, I mean, in a certain sense, it's finding things that help us, you know, come back to the ground.
Right.
And find our place. And sometimes, you know, home can be like that, certainly. But all of these things, it's finally interesting that, you know, we have that capacity. But there's a certain kind of work, or, you know, from in the spiritual tradition or that I'm in, of course you call it practice, there's a certain practice to making yourself at home, or finding yourself at home in your own body and being, and finding yourself at home in the world and making your home, and all of those things are things that we do, and they don't just happen. And I think we forget sometimes that, you know, we think these things ought to just happen. But there's a certain amount of work to it, and it can be pretty challenging at times.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you do when it's hard, when it gets hard. Uh-huh. I mean, and what you do and what others do, I think, is different. But knowing that, could you speak to that a bit?
Well. You're asking a sort of, it's a fairly difficult question, you know, what do I do when things are difficult or things are hard? Because, you know, I assume you're asking about what do I do that works.
Well, yeah, but that's too simplistic, isn't it? More like the journey, you know, how do you...
Actually, of course, when things aren't working, when things are hard, I've done a lot of different things, and, you know, with fairly haphazard results and benefit. And some of those things have been, you know, very useful and positive and lead to things, and other things have, you know, caused, you know, in some sense, more difficulty and suffering. And so it's been very challenging.
But it's like, how are you with yourself at those times of floundering? I guess that's more the question that I'm trying to get at.
How am I with myself? Well, again, you know, I think that's, you know, one of the big questions. And, you know, starting with my experience of, can I touch what's inside with some warmth and kindness? Over the years, I've been aiming to do that more and more completely. And it hasn't always been easy or, you know, particularly possible. From time to time, I am finally able to go like, oh, okay. Because certainly the tendency when things are difficult and painful, and I'm talking about anger, resentment, terror, dread, shame, worry, panic, and then there's all the sort of things like sadness, sorrow, grief, longing, desperation. I've experienced a pretty wide range of intense emotional feelings. I don't think everybody does, and, you know, there are different types of people, and that's the kind of person I am, and so it's been very challenging, and at some point, rather than trying to get rid of those feelings, I just finally go like, oh, okay, this feeling is here. I may as well breathe it right into my heart.
Right.
And that's the thing that's finally, that I finally keep coming back to. I'm going to breathe this, and rather than trying to be separate from it, I'm going to have some kindness and breathe it, inhale it right into my heart. And when I do that, it's somehow easier when I'm not pushing, you know, in a sense, myself away from myself. And I breathe into my heart, and I inhale into my heart, and things soften.
Edward, you mentioned you write poetry. Do you write poetry when you're in that confused place more easily than you do at other times? And if so, would you like to read something that you've written at that time? One of those times?
I don't really write that much poetry. I am a big fan of poetry.
Oh, I thought you said you had written.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
No, it's more that I love poetry, and then there are certain poems that I come back to. Right now I'm appreciating, I think it's Antonio Machado, it's in that Roger Hausman's book. Is it Hausman who did the book, 10 Poems to Change Your Life and then 10 Poems to Open Your Heart? It was in his first one, 10 Poems to Change Your Life, and it's the Antonio Machado, Last Night as I Was Sleeping. And that's been lately, stayed with me, and I use it a lot. The first verse, is something like, last night as I was sleeping, I dreamt, oh marvelous error, that a spring was breaking out in my heart. And I said, oh water, along which secret aqueduct are you coming to me, water of a new life which I have never drunk. That to me is very positive.
Yeah.
And the sense of possibility and letting go of things and being refreshed by, a moment of life.
Well, I like one of the poems that you sent me too, the fragment of a poem by Kabir.
Yeah.
From the Kabir book, version by Robert Bly. The guest is inside you and inside me. The sprout lies hidden within the seed. None of us has gotten very far. Set aside your arrogance then and take a look around inside. The blue sky extends further and further. The daily sense of failure comes to an end. The damage I have done to myself fades away. A million suns come forward with light when I sit firmly in that place.
Yes.
So nice. Thank you for that gift. Again, listeners, I haven't really reiterated, we are speaking with Edward Espe Brown, longtime Zen practitioner and author of many books, including the Tassajara Bread Book, Tassajara Cooking, etc., and most recently editing a book of lectures by Suzuki Roshi called Not Always So, published 2002. Who was the publisher on that, Edward?
It's HarperCollins.
HarperCollins, okay.
In New York, and it's now out in a paperback.
Oh, good, yeah.
And so there was a few hardcover copies remaindered. I bought them all.
Well, there you go. Edward is going to be speaking locally here at the Morgan Bay Zendo in Surrey on Real Life Zen, Meeting the Inner Dog and Tasting the Truth of Each Moment, Friday evening, September 3rd at 7.
That's quite, I didn't realize I'd, set out such a lengthy title there, but, that's pretty good, Meeting the Inner Dog. And
I was going to ask you about that. See, that was the next question. So, but we'll get back to that in a second. Receiving the Blessings of Our Lives, Saturday, September 4th. Both of these, you can call Vicki Pollard and Howard Evans at 374-9963 for more information, or Hugh Curran at 667-7170. And that will give you more on that. And for those of you in the Midcoast area, At Ease in Body and Mind, the second annual meditation and yoga weekend with Edward Espe Brown, September 10th through 12th, and that's at Tanglewood in Lincolnville. And for more information on that, 589-4591. So, what about this, Meeting the Inner Dog and Tasting the Truth of Each Moment?
Well, there's various derivations for meeting the inner dog. Most recently, I came across this little hand letter set little booklet, which is about conversations with the inner dog. And it's a delightful little, sort of booklet. The woman's name who wrote it is Lynn Dedannon. I guess it's a Irish name, she said. But she said that in her book, she says she had problems with her dog, with her dog's behavior. And, of course, the analogy is that most of us have problems with our own behavior.